Everybody, so we're gonna do Parashat Vayeseh. Sure. Yeah, you could close the door if you'd like. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So Vayeseh Yaakov and Be'er Shama Vayelech Harana. So we left off last week's parasha. Who remembers how it ended? We know that Yaakov did something questionable, you know, at best, when it comes to his dealings with his father and with his brother. And now, and his mom told him, you're going to go, Yamim Ahadim, you'll go for a few days, and you'll come back, Ad Asher Tashub Hamad Ahicha, until your brother subsides his anger.
There's a question that I had. I'm sorry.
Sure, please. Week. No, I'd love to.
After Yaakov went and got the Berachah from Yitzhak, the second time, right?
Yeah.
How come Yitzhak didn't reprimand him? You didn't hear him say anything like, why did you fool me the first time?
It's a great question. I mean... It could be that he does reprimand him, but the text leaves it out because I think the Torah is trying to construct a situation where we look at this and we see Yaakov is just, you know, going to be continually more and more feeling guilty throughout the story. So if it shows us his father already reprimanded him, it's not going to build that picture enough. You're right.
If the Torah left that out,
yeah,
that means maybe it's not so important.
Good, exactly. So the point is, that's not important. It's not important if how his father reprimanded him, whether or not. The important thing is, how is Yaakov going to come to it on his own?
Right.
How is he going to realize on his own?
It means it's not so important that he fooled him.
So I would completely disagree, and I hope that this week's parashah is going to prove
it
prove that
I mean,
differently.
I see
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Way, but it just
it's a possibility. Exactly.
Wrench tool in there.
It's a possibility.
If it was so bad, maybe you would have heard that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the way, you know, the way Rabbi Shammah puts it is really beautiful, is that Hashem educates, you know, Yaakov through his life. And you could think about it in your life too that way, you know. What does that mean? That we're going to see now, everything that Yaakov goes through for the rest of his life is going to be teaching him lessons regarding what he did. And it's going to be asking him to grow based on what he did wrong. And that's the greatness of Yaakov, is to view the challenges, not just as challenges to get him down, but challenges to force him to grow from the person that he used to be.
Right.
That's the
right.
inspiring thing, exactly.
And that's why
you're perplexed.
Perplexed.
You're right. You know, so I think the text doesn't want to say it explicitly because it wants to show you this is what life is. Life is not going to tell you right or wrong, black or white, what you did. Life is going to ask you to interpret it.
That's
because things are very ambiguous. That's exactly what it says. I think that's the way the text is written. So it's a very good question, though. So let's see. This is really a beautiful vision now. Vayifga b'makom. And now he is pogeya in the makom, meaning, and the Hachamim tells us, you know, he prayed there. Really, it just means he encountered the place. And this place is very important throughout Jewish history. You're going to see the name of the place very soon. It's going to be Bet El. And we know throughout Jewish history, this is a real center of religion. So now, you know, it's going to be echoing throughout the ages and the generations, the meaning of this place. You know, people in the future are going to do Avodah Zarah over there. And they're going to turn
the
it...
Same Bethel that people living in.
Yes,
Israel.
Same one as today. Mm. So in the ancient world, it went from being a place to Hashem to becoming a place of Avodah Zarah. And the Nevi'im are constantly, you know, reprimanding the people and saying, you know, they changed the name from Bet El to Bet Avin, to the house of vanity. And you know, emptiness. That's kind of the way the Hachamim call it, the Nevi'im call it, because the people made it so corrupt. So now, as we read the story, hey, how you doing, Avi? So we are obligated, as we read the story, to view it from that lens. Baruch haba. Yeah, yeah. No, fadal. Page we're up to doing Parashat Vayeseh.
Okay.
83. Great. 83. Exactly. Okay, so Vayifgam Makom Vayelin Sham Kibah Shemesh. So he decides to rest over there because the sun was setting. Vayikach Me'avnei Makom Vayasim Mira Ashotav. And he puts the stones under his head. Vayishkeb Makom Ahu. And listen how many times it says, the Makom. And we're going to see later on in Yaakov's life, it's going to use the same word, Hamakom. El Hamakom, where he built the thing. So this place is so central throughout Jewish history. And like we're saying, you need to remember what Yaakov represents. He represents Am Yisrael in general. He is not just himself. The same thing we said for Abraham, same thing we said with Yitzhak, is going to apply for Yaakov. And what he's doing in this place is going to be very significant for Jews throughout the generations, and we'll see why. Vayahalom, so he has a dream, And this is interesting because we're going to have a lot of dreams for the rest of Sefer Bereshit. This kicks it off. Sulam musav arsa. And now someone interprets this as a ladder. I'm going to interpret this as some kind of, you know, stairway. A stairway upwards. Mutsav arsa. Mutsav arsa, yeah. Yeah, like a matseva. Perfect, and that's what he does in a second. Yeah. That's a great point. I didn't even realize that. That it's an erect staircase, mutsav arza, so it's on the ground, v'rosho magia hashamayma, and its top gets to the heavens. Now, I heard that, you know, another dream that we're going to see later on is going to kind of, this dream is going to bifurcate into going from, you know, the earth and the heavens. We're going to see another dream from somebody else later on, from Yosef, that has a dream regarding the heavens, which is the stars. And one regarding the earth, which is that they were gathering the wheat. So that's interesting already to think about. That Yaakov's dream is going to bifurcate, going to become two in the life of Yosef. And we'll get to that in that parasha, what the meaning, because that's a tremendous, you know, the symbolism of Yosef's dreams are unbelievable. And hopefully, if you guys are able to, we'll go through that when we get to it. There's angels going up and down this staircase. So clearly, it's a holy place. I think that's really the meaning of this. You know, more than anything, more than any of the Midrashim, I think the meaning is this is a place where God is involved.
Like Bet El.
Bet El, exactly. Very good. And God is standing at the top of this stairway. Vayomar, and he says, Ani Adonai, Elohe Abraham Avicha, Elohe Yitzhak. He says, I am the God of your forefather Abraham and Yitzhak. Ha'ares asher ata shuchev aleh letcha etenen al zaraicha. I'm going to give you this land. And this is a continuation of the covenant that we've seen starting from Abraham, continuing through Yitzhak and now to Yaakov. V'aya zaracha ka'afar ha'aretz ufarasa yam avakedma v'safon avanegba. You're going to have Zeran. By the way, this is all confirming what we saw at the end of last week's parasha, where Yitzhak told him, you're going to get Birkat Avraham. And this is exactly what Birkat Avraham is. And that's how we know, by the way, from last week, that Yitzhak never intended to give the covenant to Yitzhak, to Esav. Yitzhak always intended to give the covenant to Yaakov. Does that remind you of anybody? Avraham, same thing. You'll be a blessing. I'll be with you. And I'm going to watch over you, everything. Imagine I'm Israel reading through this. And you know, this is Yaakov is Israel. He represents what we are as a nation. So we have to know this as well. That we are going to inherit and he's going to be with us throughout all, everything we do. Just like, you know, he's going into exile. When I'm Israel going into exile, we're also going to be returned. Yeah.
Yaakov represents Am Yisrael more so than...
I wouldn't say more so less. I think each one of them in their own way does, 100%. And now Yaakov is going into exile in a sense. God is saying, I'm going to return you, just like the same way for Am Yisrael as a whole later on.
Is this the first time?
This is the first time that
Hashem and Yaakov are corresponding?
We've never seen it before.
So it seems like
this is the first time that Hashem is really reaching out to Yaakov in a significant way that we know of. No, Yaakov is running away from his brother. It's a practical thing. Yeah. He says, I'm not going to leave you until I have accomplished what I set out, says Hashem.
This is a halom.
Yeah.
It's a halom. Vision.
Exactly. So it's
is
not
the highest level of Nevuah?
Certainly not. Moshe's, of course, was the highest. And Moshe, we see Moshe while he's awake. Communicating with God, Yaakov is—he's a Navi, but he's not—he's not at the level of Moshe. That's of course a whole new level.
Right.
You're right. It's definitely not—it's definitely significant what he's getting. So Vayikatz Yaakov Mishenato, he wakes up. Vayomer Achen, he says, indeed, I didn't realize this. Yesh Adonai b'makom hazeh, God is in this place. Ve'anuchi lo yadati, and I didn't know. He says, I didn't realize how significant this place was. And this is going to echo through the generations. Vayira vayomar, and he was afraid and he said, Man nora hamakom hazeh, how awesome is this place? En zeh ki im bet Elohim, vezeh shar hashamayim. And this is the gateway to heaven. Now, why is this so important? Well, in the ancient world, what we mentioned for Migdal Bavel was a place that was basically a ziggurat.
Bab
El, exactly. That's what we mentioned in the panel, right? Bab means gate. The gate, exactly. El is God.
Is the door?
The door or gateway. So either way, it means a gateway to God. So now, you know what Yaakov is saying? This is Shana Shamayim. This is like the Bab Il that the Babylonians are trying to build. But it's, you know, he envisioned this structure, but the way that the Babylonians, they built these tremendous ziggurats all over Babylonia, which is these just gigantic structures with like stairs going upwards.
Pyramids,
exactly. And they believed, oh, we're going to get to the gods when we go up these, similar to Migdal Bavil we hear about earlier on in Bereshit. So now you read through this story and you say, wow, the Torah is still going against that. It's still trying to counter those people who believe, oh, we could get to God through our own might and our own strength. The Torah is going to show us, no, that's not how you get to God. You get to God through being a person like Yaakov. And that involves going on a journey of self-discovery, going on a journey where you do a Heshbon HaNefesh, which is, you know, really, you know, introspecting about who you are and where you need to grow. I think that's what this is laying the ground for. Vayashkem Yaakov baboker. So Yaakov gets up in the morning. Vayikach et ha'even asher sam ben ha'ashoda vayasim otam ha'seva vayisok shemen al rosha. And he sets up the stone as a monument and he pours oil on it. Vayikrash et shem ha'makom ahu bet el. This is the house of God. Not those ziggurats that those people believe in. Ve'olam luz shem ha'ilei rishon, even though it's called luz previously. Vayidar Yaakov neder lemor. Now Yaakov swears. If God is with me and watches over me, if He watches over me in this journey and He gives me all everything I need, then God will be my God. And in a sense, it's not saying, oh, it's a contingency. It's a way of saying, I need this. God, I need this from you. It's a way of... It's like a prayer in a sense. That's the way I think about it. It's like, God, please do this for me. Please see me through this journey and return me back from where I'm leaving. Because this is a very transitional point for Yaakov. Hence the Midrashim about the Malachim representing the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz, right, in the vision. V'shavti l'shalom, he said, V'ha'eben azot asher samti matseva. And this matseva, which is going to come up later on in his life, yeh bet Elohim. This will be the house of God. And you could think of all the people living throughout the generations in Am Yisrael who are feeling guilty probably if they read this, because they realize we're worshipping Avodah Zarah in this Bet Avin. It's supposed to be Bet Elohim. It's supposed to be a place where we're dedicated to God. So this is coming, in a sense, to play off of that. So now he goes... And we don't have to read through every single word. So he sees a be'er, and he gets there. And I want to get to the point, you know, so now we see something very significant about this well of water. And what we've mentioned previously with Yitzhak, that Yitzhak, when he redug the wells of Abraham, what does that represent? Remember what we said? It represents the journey that Abraham began. Or we you know, the Hachamim say, En be'er illa Torah, that be'er and ma'im represents Torah in a very fundamental sense. And even like, you know, they say in this shul, Evan is like a play on nevuah. Evan, and when you take the Evan, me'alpia be'er, from the mouth of the be'er, and you get the Torah, it seems like something deeper is going on here, if you want to read it that way. So, he became the person that was in some way, it seems, spreading some message of Torah, just like we saw with Abraham, that Abraham was, every time he built an altar, Vayikra b'shem Hashem, he would call out in the name of God. Similar seeming thing here with Yaakov, right? And then after that episode, so go to Pasuk He, Vayomer lehem ha'idatem Lavan ben Nahor, Vayomer ha'yadanu, do you know my uncle? They say, yes, we do. And then he says, how's he doing? And all of a sudden, he sees Rachel coming. And you could, well, let's skip, you know, to eventually he meets Rachel, he meets Lavan, he goes there, and here's when he takes off the stone. The real important thing now is going to be his interaction with Lavan, because this is where his real character growth is going to have to come. Because think about it, what began his, you know, deceitful qualities? Why did Yaakov deceive his father? Well, who told him to?
His mother,
right? And which household did his mother grow up in?
Lavan.
The same one that Lavan grew up in. So now, it's an amazing thing that the text is telling us. With Yaakov encountering Lavan, is encountering the literal source of what he did. It's a symbolic thing too. To encounter that level of deceit is not, it seems like it's something external to what he is. But really, when you encounter a person like that, you're really encountering a part of yourself. And I think this is the case with our lives too. You know, I think about this in my life all the time. You know, if somebody asks me to do something and I'm not comfortable with it, you know, if they ask me to, you know, I don't know, give them money for something and I don't think the money's going to go to a good cause. You know, if I am able to say no and I'm able to exercise that because, you know, I think about my psychology and my whole life, I had difficulty saying no, I had difficulty standing up for myself. Now, when I look at this person, it's not about them. This is not about their specific cause. This has more to do with me and my psychology and my ability to take this episode in my life as an opportunity to rectify things in my past. So if in the past I was not able to stand up for myself, in this event in my life I'm going to decide, no, I'm going to stand up for myself. So for me, it represents a lot more than maybe what they're representing, what they actually mean. For me, it represents my ability to stand up for myself, my ability to stand up for what I believe is true and right. So I think that's often the reason. You know, so there's a great book called The Four Agreements, where the author says, by Paolo Coelho, and the author says, don't take anything personally. That's one of the agreements. And why don't take anything personally? Because everything that people are doing in life has nothing to do with other people. It really has everything to do with ourselves. So now Yaakov, who is going to be encountering all these different things, he's going to not have to take it as, oh, Lavan doesn't like me. That's not the way you should be taking things in life. Look at it from, how am I going to respond? How do I grow from this? What does this have to do with me and my psychology? You can't control how other people are going to react to you, how they're going to behave to you. But you can control the way that you react to it and the way that you see it in the context of your life and your life's meaning. So don't take anything personally, because it really has nothing to do with you when somebody does something to you. That has everything to do with their movie. They're the main character of their movie. You're the main character of your movie. You have no reason to try to think, oh, they're doing this to spite me. It's not really at all what it is.
It's just them.
And you're just you. And you just, your roads happen to be intertwined along the way. So this is a very amazing way, not only to grow as a person, but also to realize, you know, you could be at peace with other people. You don't have to hold grudges anymore when you're able to think this way. It's a beautiful thing. Right? So, finally now, Yaakov is encountering this figure, Lavan, who we said represents a part of himself that began the deceitfulness in his life. And he's encountering him. And right, we see now, it starts off, you go to Pasuk Yod Hayet. So, he's going to work for him. He wants to marry Rachel. Right, Vayehav Yaakov et Rachel, Pasuk Yod Hayet, Vayomer Avodcha Sheva Shanim B'Rachel B'Techa Ketan. I'll work for you 7 years for your youngest daughter Rachel. Look how specific he is, because he maybe knows, well, this guy is a little bit of a Ramai, he's a tricker guy, he's a trickster. So I gotta, you know, be specific. Vayomer Lavan Tov Titi Ota Lach Mit Titi Ota Lishacher Sheva Imadi. Better I give her to you than somebody else. Stay with me. He works for 7 years. And look at these words. Where do we see that phrase previously? Rivka told Yaakov, she says, right. Only a few days. Only a few days.
I'll come back.
Does that come true?
No.
Not at all. 22 years go by, however many years go by. And that's the tragedy. So we're seeing, again, because of the scheming of Rivka, she never gets to see her son again, because she didn't do things in a kosher way. She decided to take her household workings, the way of deceit, and try to implement that in her new household. And Yaakov complied. And because of that, that's biting her, you know, back, and you know, because of what she did. So now, it's a very sad thing. It's a tragic thing, because he never sees her again. Right, so and that's very ironic to us as the reader. Okay, yalla, let me get married to my wife. So Lavan So they make a wedding party. Vayhi ba'erev, vayikach et Leah bito vayaveh ota elav, vayavo elea. So he brings Leah instead of Rachel, and you know, Yaakov sleeps with her. Vayiten Lavan la et zilpah shevchato leleah bito shevchan. Parenthetically, the Torah is telling us what's going to happen, you know, what happened, sorry, for Leah that night, actually. She also gets a gift from her father. Zilpah is going to be her shevcha, and that's going to be important later on because Yaakov is going to marry her as well. Vayhi ba'boker. All of a sudden, it's Le'ah. And now, you know, the light shines. And you could kind of think, what does this remind you of? The same way, the same sudden realization of Yitzhak. Yitzhak and Esav. When Yitzhak and Esav realize they've been duped, that's their realization. Like, oh my God, I just got screwed. It's a similar thing. Same thing's going on here with Yaakov. So now he's getting a taste of his own medicine. Vayomer el Lavan, mazot asita li. Look at the language that he's using, right? So, lama remitani. What did Yitzhak say last week? Ba'achicha b'mirma. Mirma, same word, right? Trickery. It's the same thing. The Torah is trying to show me, even though I'm not going to explicitly criticize Yaakov for what he did, I'm going to show you through the ambiguity of his life. Because life is ambiguous, and your job is to interpret it the right way. Interpret it in a way that you're going to grow. So the Torah, through these literary devices, is saying, remember the previous story, and see how it's directly impacting this one. Listen to this also. You can't go one line without realizing it. He says, you know what Lavan responds to Yaakov? He says, we don't do that here. Not like you do back home. We don't give the younger before the older. Right. Even though you, the younger, stole the blessing from the older, we don't operate that way where I'm from. And you could imagine Yaakov, what he's thinking, how he's feeling. It's probably tearing him to pieces. Exactly. Exactly. It's a crazy thing. You know, how do you respond? Yeah. So that's a midrash. It's not in the text itself. But it's a nice midrash because I think it has a lot to say about the way that we should act as siblings. But certainly I think the text says the opposite. It was a very rivalry kind of a situation, their relationship actually. So it's interesting. Right? So you read through this and you say, what kind of psychological defense mechanisms is Yaakov probably going through? Maybe some kind of rationalization, maybe some kind of suppression. He's trying to get this out of his head, probably. He's trying to say, you know what? This is not an indication of what happened to me previously. This guy's just a Ramai. He is just a trickster. This is nothing to do with my previous past. And eventually, these things are going to have to build up to such a tipping point, it's going to force Yaakov to grow. So what happens? Maleh shavu azot, finish these 7 years. V'netena lecha gam et zot ma'avoda she'tavod imadi od sheva shanim acherot. Work another 7 years. So he does, and now you could see there's a lot of birthing going on. I don't think we need to read through all that, just for the sake of time. Exactly, for sure. Lavan is a very selfish guy in that sense. For sure, he's very cunning, very shrewd. So there's a lot of, we see the family really growing here, and it's a big blessing for Yaakov that he's getting all this stuff and all these children. And he marries not only Leah and Rachel, but also Zilpah and Bilhah, exactly, the Shevachot. Okay, so now you could go and now look at this. Go to Pasuk Yodalet. Vayelech Reuven, b'mekesit hatim, everyone with me, Pasuk Yodalet. Vayimtsa dudaim basadeh. So Reuven, one day, he's the eldest, and he finds these, what do they call them, junipers here? Mandrakes. He finds mandrakes in the field. He brings them to his mother Leah. Give me some of your son's, what do we call them, mandrakes. Right, so we're already seeing something here. We're seeing jealousy. The jealousy and the rivalry, and between the wives of Yaakov. And the tragedy is that the whole reason for any of this began with the way that Yaakov dealt previously. It's actually, in a sense, it's an outgrowth of his previous actions, because the fact that he tricked his father and his brother led him to where he is now. And it's manifesting itself, the same kind of sibling rivalry between two sisters this time instead of two brothers, but the same rivalry in his new family as well. So you're going to see that in your life as well. You're going to see there are themes in your life. There's themes that keep repeating themselves. And they're begging you to pay attention to them. Because only when you decode these themes, and a good way, by the way, to realize them is maybe dreams, dream interpretation of your own. And if you see you're having a repetitive dream about something, this, it's kind of asking you to notice it and grow from it. So Yaakov is going to have this repeating, you know, pathology in his life in many forms. So she says to her, was it not enough for you to take my husband? Now you're going to take my son's mandrakes? Listen to that. It's like, say it again?
Reminds me of Esav.
Exactly. Right, it reminds you of, right, same exact thing. It's taking something that you didn't deserve. Right now, Leah is saying to Rachel, was it not enough? You took my husband. Now you're taking my mandrakes too.
How's it husband?
Exactly. You know, he intended to marry Rachel. So you see how twisted it is. It's warped. And you see the pathology in the family. You know, so that's the thing. Like we said, the Midrash is not what the Pshat says.
What's so great about the mandrakes?
The mandrakes, good question. They believed that they had some kind of aphrodisiac properties, meaning they helped with fertility. And which, of course, you know, Rachel was in Yerad. She didn't have Yosef yet, right? She's still,
no.
Exactly. She only Bilhah had children so far. And Rachel Hazita, you know, you feel your heart bleeds for her. You feel bad for Rachel because she has no children. And she's doing anything she can to try to have children. And look at the way that Leah responds.
She's down.
Exactly. Uh-huh. It's not a pleasant thing to read.
Not nice, yeah.
The Torah wants you to notice this and say, look at the family structure. Not good. V'tomer Rachel, lachen yishkav imach alayla. Rachel says, you know what? I'll give him to you tonight. Tahadu da ibnech. If only you give me those mandrakes. And it's like, wow.
What were these things?
There was some kind of plant. They believed that this plant, a flower maybe, you know, that it helped with, that was the belief at the time. So
the
now,
fertility.
Exactly. So now, you look at this, they're bartering, they're bartering over something that's supposed to be something holy. Yeah. So what's going on here? They're literally bartering about who gets to sleep with Yaakov that night. This is like, you know, to take a love relationship and bring it down 10 levels. It's very off-putting. A relationship should not be about bartering who gets Yaakov tonight. And it's you read this and you say, wow, this is really not good. She pretty much says, I bought you tonight. How do they translate that here? I've hired thee with my son's mandrakes. I hired you for tonight. This is a husband. Is he, what is he, a hired day worker?
Terrible.
It's crazy. Bedud Ibeni. And how did I buy you tonight? With these mandrakes. Vayishkav ima balailahu. And he said, okay, so he slept with her that night. Vayishma Elohim el Le'ah. And apparently Le'ah was calling out to God because God heard her. Vatar vatil Yaakov ben Hamishi. She has another kid and she calls him Natan Elohim Sechari. That's why she calls him Yisachar. Because she said, Sachor Secharticha, I bought you. She even names her kid that. The product of me, you know, renting Yaakov for the night. That's what you are. She basically called him renter. You know, that's his name. It's a sad thing. All right. And she has Ben Shishi, and she has Zevulun. Okay. And then she has, finally, Dinah. And now we see Pasuk Kaf Bet. Vayizkor Elohim et Rachel. God remembers Rachel. Vayishma Eleah Elohim. And he remembers her. And he listens to her. Vayiftach et Rahma. And now, the word Vayizkor is very, very significant because we've seen it throughout Bereshit and we're going to see it throughout the rest of Tanakh as a berit, as a covenant, right? Vayizkor Elohim et Noach, Vayizkor Vashem Pakad et Sarah. Every time we're seeing the covenant is going to need to continue, it's with this word Zachar. right? And here, it's for the birth of Yosef. So already the text is hinting to me that there's something covenantal going on here. Something very, very significant to the continuation of the covenant through Rachel's first son, who is going to be Yosef. And she gave birth. Asaf Elohim et Hirpati. God gathered in my hirpa, my, you know, disgustingness. It's a way of saying the embarrassment that I was bearing. And how sad is that? That she was valued simply for the ability to have children or not. Yosef lemor Yosef li ben acher. She goes to Yosef also, I want to have another kid. Like, that's not enough yet. Look at this. They were naming people based on a rivalry, based on competition of who's going to have more kids. And that's not, you know, it's not something you want in your family. So he says, you know what? Okay, I'm ready to go back home. Says Yaakov, he says, you know, I've been very, strong in the way that I've worked for you, and that I've been honest. Please, nihashti. I've divined, meaning I'm using these divinations, which of course is not allowed in our culture and through the Torah. Good nihush. He says, I realized through, and how ironic is this? I divined to realize that God blessed me because of you. And it's like, all right, Lavan is a very, you know, questionable person based on the things that he says and the way that he behaves. So we're just trying to re-emphasize who we're dealing with. Vayomar, nokva secharecha alai ve'etena. He says, you know what? Okay, tell me what you, how much I owe you. Look how great you've become and how many cattle you now have since I've arrived. God blessed you because of me, basically. He says, I need to start my own family, so you need to pay me well. He says, what could I give you? Now listen to what he says. He says, I want you to give me all the speckled and spotted among your cattle. So this is going to be another example of Yaakov. Is he dealing in a way that's a little bit shaky, right? Now this is a little bit more, ambiguous, because we're not sure, is Yaakov really acting in a way that's not so good? But he's dealing with Lavan also. He's dealing with a trickster. So maybe he has a little bit of a right to act like this. Let's see. He says, okay, no problem. You take all the speckled and spotted ones, and everything else goes to me. And Lavan takes out all of the goats that would belong to Yaakov. And it seems like Lavan is doing this in order to decrease the amount of cattle that Yaakov is going to be able to have. He's separating the ones from the flock. But so now Yaakov is responding. He takes a certain kind of, almond wood, yeah, whatever it may be. Look how many times it mentions Lavan, Lavan, Lavan. We mentioned it in a previous pasuk. It's like he's acting in a Lavan kind of a way. And it's saying, you know, you can't even fault Yaakov that much for this, because he's dealing with a Ramai. But look how he's getting down and dirty with a guy like Lavan. He's almost stooping to his level. So when you do business, the question is, are you going to get down to their level? Are you going to stoop to their level? Or are you going to operate based on principles that you believe to be proper no matter what? And it seems like Yaakov was the kind of guy at this point in his life, he was willing to do whatever it took to get what he wanted, even maybe if that meant...
Maybe I had to.
So this case, you're right. In this case, I can't really fault him. Exactly. This case, he's definitely being taken advantage of. So maybe in this case, it would be good. But I think it still speaks about his character to some degree, that he was very capable of being a Ramai the same way that Lavan was. Not that he was necessarily wrong here, but that he had this in him. It was really part of who he was.
Maybe
now.
You can make the same case with his brother.
With Esav? So with Esav, it's very different, I think.
Because
Esav was not a trickster. Exactly.
How do you know?
The Torah gives no indications. Portray. Not at all.
Michael,
yeah.
Sorry,
no problem, yeah.
Minutes.
Please.
What did you say? How did Yaakov trick Laban?
So we're going to see right now, he's going to do something basically where he's going to create a situation where all the cattle that's going to be born is going to have speckled and spotted patterns on them so that they're all going to belong to him. He's going to manipulate the genetics.
Why did he want speckled?
Because they made an agreement earlier. They said, whatever's speckled will go to you, says Lavan to Yaakov. Whatever's not speckled will go to me. So now Yaakov knows if he makes more speckled cattle, they'll all go to him.
But first, Lavan took all the speckled
ones. Yeah, and Lavan already took away all the speckled ones to prevent them from interbreeding with the other ones so that he gets less of the speckled. Right? So now Yaakov is playing the game. Vayatzeged lav et amalkot. So he does a certain thing in order to, while they're drinking the water. This is not so important, the details of how he does it. And it turns out that what happens? He somehow was able to use this stick to make it so that they became speckled and spotted, right? Vayifrotza ish meod meod. And as a result of, and this is pasuk mem gimel, as a result of these questionable dealings, he became great. So his foundation is built on wealth from this. Vayilotzon abot ushvachot vavanim gmalim v'hamonim. And he has tons of stuff. Just like Avraham and Yitzhak previously did, right? We've seen in Avraham and Yitzhak's time that they had tremendous wealth. But you can't help but compare and say, well, you know, it's a little different with Yaakov. Unfortunately, he's getting it through a means with a person that's not so good. And, you know, he's dealing with in certain ways that, you know, we would not really want, you know, in an ideal situation. Not that he's necessarily wrong, but it's just part of what he's become now. I think it's also for us in our lives, if you find yourself in a situation where you have to start questioning your values and you find yourself in a questionable situation where you're asking yourself, how did I get here? How did I get to this point where I'm having to ask myself, how do I deal with this? How do I kind of fugazi the system? How do I deal with the system in a way that's questionable? Maybe the point is you could take yourself out of that situation. Maybe you could refuse to deal with people that deal like that. Maybe you could find some way to not have to be put in these morally ambiguous situations, if it's possible. I think that's a very powerful lesson here. Right? So now, Vayishma et devre b'nei Lavan lemor lakach Yaakov et kol asher le'avinu me'asher le'avinu asa et kol hakavod hazeh. And look, as a result of his building his wealth in this way, they all get jealous. And they'll say, oh, he took all my dad's wealth. Right, that's what the sons of Lavan say. But Yaakov et pene Lavan v'nein enu imok kitmos shoshom. When it comes to money now, oh no, Lavan is really not happy. Vayomer Adonai el Yaakov. Now Yaakov gets a vision from God. Shuv el eretz avodecha mulatecha ve'ayeh imach. He says, go back to your father's house and I'll be with you. Basically say, get the heck out of there. Vayishlach Yaakov.
Not a chalom, this is direct communication.
So I think Hanambam assumes that no matter what, it's got to be a halom. But you're right, it doesn't seem, you know, it could have been. But I think he even says to his wives in a second that it was in a halom. But we'll see how he relays it. Right? So the Torah doesn't always specify how the vision came. Right? Vayomer lahen. So he says, so now, Vayishlach Yaakov, Vayikra l'rachal, he calls to his wives, and he says, Asadi al-sono, Vayomer lahen, he says to them, Ro'e anochi et pene avichen, ki enenu elai kitmol shesham. He's not, you know, so happy with me right now. Ve'elohe avi, haya imadi. And my God is with me. Oh, it doesn't specify how it was, the vision. Ve'aten ayed aten, ki b'chol kohi avadti et avichen. He says, you know how honest I've been, and I've done everything I could, you know, with all my strength. He, you know, played with me, deceived me 10 times. And God didn't allow him to really get to me. He says, it just happened to be that it worked out in my favor. That the ones that were born were spotted and speckled. And he doesn't really mention that he was the one who was able to manipulate that for his benefit. And he says, I had in my dream, this is what he tells them, instead of telling them the way it objectively happened, which is that he just, you know, manipulated the genetics, he says, I saw in my dream, and we're not even sure if this dream happened that Yaakov is saying. He said, I had a dream. So he says, God told me to deal with in this way with Lavan, to do all these things to get my share of the cattle. I am the God of that you met in Bet El. And now return. So it's interesting. It could be that this all happened in his vision. But the Torah only tells us objectively, previously, the end part, right? That God says, come back. It never mentioned all this stuff about, you know, how to deal with this, with the cattle.
God told them to deal with them.
Exactly. So it could be. It could very well be. But I think that the reason the Torah portrays it the way it does is to try to make a question, is Yaakov acting the right way or not? That at least has to be a question for you. They say, you know what? You're right, Yaakov. We don't even feel like we're family here. We want to leave. He pretty much sold us. He doesn't care about us anymore. Right? They say, no, we have a right to the wealth. They say, do everything that God commanded of you. Okay. Yaakov is ready to run away. And he takes all of his wealth and everything that he already had begun gathering in Padan Aram. Is that what it is? That he began gathering in? Yeah, that he had acquired? And then he got even in Padan Aram. So apparently he did have some stuff already from before he left. It seemed like he didn't have much, but he had some stuff. So he's ready to return home. It happens to be Lavan was ready to be, he was shearing his cattle. And now Rachel does something very strange. Rachel steals the terafim, which is some kind of divination device, a way of being nohesh, nihush, right, which is divination, is this way of telling magical things, futuristic things. And Rachel steals that stuff. Look at the way the Torah says, both of them are gonev. Yaakov steals the heart of Lavan by leaving, and Rachel physically stole the terafim. And we're not really sure why.
Who had the terafim?
They belonged to Lavan, and Rachel stole them. Right? By not telling that he's running away, he stole his heart.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It's it really hurt Lavan on an emotional level.
Goose, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So now Yaakov is ready to go to a place called Gilad. And it's funny because it's going to be named Galad in a minute from now. And we'll see the importance of that in a second. And we're going to see whose life is so significant in Gilad. And this is going to be, for me, we'll end the class with this, the most inspiring part of the parasha. And this reminds you of Yetziat Mitzrayim, right? Just like Vayugad the Melech Mitzrayim ki barach ha'am. Now we're having Vayugad Lavan Bayom HaShelishi, just like it was also the third day. Exactly. Vayikach Haydehav Imo Vayirdof Aharav, just like Vayirdof Aharav Bnei Yisrael in Yetziat Mitzrayim. So Lavan chasing after Yaakov reminds us of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Derech Shevat Yamim, just like Yetziat Mitzrayim, it seems. Right? Because it was on the seventh day that the sea split.
He was afraid that he chased after him because he...
He didn't want him to go. Exactly. He says, watch yourself. Don't act the wrong way with Yaakov. Right? Vayaseg Lavan et Yaakov. Just like it says in Shemot. Vayasigu otam honim al hayam. That when the Egyptians got to the Israelites at the Yam Suf, it uses the same word. So this is the way the Torah works. It's going to comment on itself. Hyperlinks between the stories. And they're both set up camp, you know, in this area. You stole my heart. You stole my daughters also. You took them away. He says, I would have sent you away in happiness and with tof and chinor, with, you know, with symbols and everything, and that reminds us of, right, but tikach Miriam haNeviya, achot Aaron, et hatof beyada, but tesen achol anashim achareha, betubim ubemcholot, right, so it reminds us of Shirat Hayam, right, Shirat Hayam, which is Az Yashir, which is happening right after Kiryat Yam Suf. Similar thing going on here, reminder of that. He says, and you've acted in a very questionable way. This is not nice how you acted to me, says Lavan. Look at that word. Aso. What does that spell? Esav. It's a play on words.
Wow.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Right.
It's reminding him, Yaakov, you're acting the same way you acted with Esav. How dare you? Yesh le'el yadi la'asot imachem ra. He says, I could kill you, just like Esav wanted to kill you. But you know what? Your God came to me last night. He said not to touch you. But if not for that, I would have hurt you. And that reminds us a little bit of, you know, we're going to actually mention that in a second, but it reminds me of Gunov Gunavti Me'eretz HaEvrim, which Yosef is going to say, but we'll get to those connections in a second. Lama ganavta et Elohai? Why did you steal my gods?
It also reminds you of Abimelech.
Yes, very good. Exactly. Vayan Yaakov ayomer Lavan. Yaakov says to Lavan, "Ki yareti yamariti pendekzot menotecha me'aymi." Yaakov said, "No, I didn't want you to take my daughters away, your daughters away from me." Im ashet demsad elohecha lo yachyeh. And now, unfortunately, what Yaakov says now is going to come true. Whoever stole the terafim is going to die. And who's going to die? Rachel's going to die when she gives birth to Binyamin. So that's the tragedy of it all. Look at the results of everything that Yaakov is doing. I don't want to blame everything on him, but it seems like these are all offshoots of one thing leading to another, till it even results in the death of his beloved. It's tragic. Neged Achenu Haker Lecha. Haker Lecha, right? What does that remind you of? Haker Na, right? They're going to tell him when they sell Yosef, Haker Na. Haketonet Bechai, is this your son's tunic? Or even Velohi Kiro. Right, well, no, when Yaakov tricked his father, and his father, it says, Velohi Kiro, he didn't recognize him. Haker Lecha. He's using that same word. Ma'im Adi V'kachach. Velohi Ada Yaakov Ki Rachel Genavatam. The Torah says, oh, Yaakov didn't know Rachel had them. If he would have known, he wouldn't have said that. And now you could skip a little bit, and Lavan searched everywhere. He couldn't find the Terafim. Rachel puts them under her Bechara Gamal. She puts them, you know, in a certain area. Under the saddle, exactly. Vaymashesh Lavan et kol ha'oil v'lomasa. And Lavan feels around. What does that remind you of? Who else felt somebody's skin to see who they are? Yitzhak. Right? Vaymushehu. He felt him. Ulay yemusheni avi. Says it's the same story repeating itself of deceit and stealing. Lama ganavta et Elohai. Right? Just like he stole the blessing. Similar story. And now he's feeling around and he couldn't find it. So first of all, the word bechar sounds a little bit like bechor. This I heard from Rabbi Foreman. Keep that in mind. So bechor is a little bit important here, right? In the whole story previously, right? She says, oh, I'm having my period. I can't get up, Dad. So you're not gonna. He's not gonna find the terafim because she's sitting on them and she can't get up, and he couldn't find them.
But what was the purpose that she took them?
We don't really know. But we do know that it's going to repeat itself when they steal the goblet. When they steal Yosef's goblet, which they didn't really steal, but Yosef plants, it's also an object of Nihush. And it's a very, I think it's to draw that connection. I'm not really sure what her motivation was, but it's a good question. Right? So now, vayichal Yaakov, vayara b'lavan. Vayan Yaakov, vayamin l'avan. Now, this is going to be the beginning of some very interesting connections, which we'll try to point out here. Ma peshim machatati ki dalakta aharai. He says, why are you running after me? Ki mishashta et kol kelai ki mamasata mikol kele betecha sim ko neged ahai ve'ahecha v'yuchichem ben shenenu. If I really did anything wrong, you let me know. Ze 20 shana anochi imach rehailecha ve'aizecha lo shekelu. He says, you were not bereaved of any of your cattle. Now, what rahelecha? What does that remind you of? Rahel, his wife. You are not bereaved of your rehelim. But because of what I just said, the curse that I just said, I'm going to soon be bereaved of my Rahel. Right? I'll be done in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Perfect. Sure. Right? And he says, and I did not eat any of your son, right? And what does that remind you of? Hayar ra'a achalatu, like with Yosef, right? Hayar ra'a ate him. So we're seeing a lot of things that are going to remind us of all the suffering of the house of Rachel from now. So we saw bechara gamal bechor, maybe something like that. Rechelecha ve'aizecha l'shekelu, but I'm going to be nishkal from my Rachel very soon. And none of your cattle got eaten, but they're going to claim that Yosef. Terefalo eveti elecha, just like it's going to say taraf toraf Yosef. Same thing. Anochi ahatena miyadit avakshenna reminds you of what? What Yehuda says about Binyamin. Anochi arvenu miyadit avakshenna. It's like the same phrase. Isn't that amazing? It's reminding us over and over again of all the suffering of the house of Rachel. Gunuvti yom gunuvti laila. Yosef in jail is going to say, gunov gunavti meretz ha'ivrim. I was stolen from the land of the Israelites, of the Hebrews. So all these things are coming to tell me there's something about this place, Gilad or Galed, that's very significant. And where is Yosef going to be later on? He's going to be Beretz in Gilad. And Gilad is where he's going to be sold into slavery. So this place, Gilad or Galed, they're going to name it Galed, but it really is Gilad. It's this place that represents the beginning of all the suffering of the house of Rachel. It's where he curses that whoever stole the thing is going to be stolen, is going to be killed. It's where Yosef is going to be sold. It's where all these intertextual connections are connecting us.
What does the word mean?
Galaed means a pile of stones that's a witness. And he calls it Yigadis HaHaduta. But I think, you know, you look later on in the Torah, at the end of Bemidbar and Matot Mas'eh, and we see, and we'll end with this, there's something very strange going on. That we have this guy named Ya'ir ben Menasheh, captures the Gilad. And it's like, okay, what do I have to know this for? And it seems very strange because you read in Sefer David HaYamim, and this guy Ya'ir is not from Menasheh. He's from a different tribe. He's really from Yehuda. The question is, why does the Torah tell me he's from Menasheh? It seems that, you know why? Because you look at his maternal grandma is from Menasheh. But the Torah says he's from Menasheh. Why is that? We never go according to the maternal grandmother. Because the Torah is saying, he realized something amazing. He says, I'm from the house of Yehuda on my dad's side. And I'm also from the house of Yosef on my mom's side. So I represent the pathology between the two families. I am an embodiment of the struggle between these two families. And if I could do something to put that to rest, that would be amazing. So he picks this place, Gilad, where the beginning of all the suffering of the house of Rachel began. And he says, I'm from Yehuda, but I'm going to conquer this in the name of my maternal grandmother, in the name of my of Rachel Imenu. Right, of the Shevet Menasheh. And that's going to put an end, really, at the end of the stories of the Torah, to that whole story. And it's going to make us see amazing peace happening between the families. So we're beginning Arbit right now. Yeah. And then, thank you very much, guys. Really, it's a pleasure. And Hazaku Baruch. And the last thing, Vayivge'u b'malach Elohim. At the end, he's going to name the place Peniel. And we're going to see next week, he also calls it the Mahanaim, and Peniel, this week also Peniel? No, not this week. So Mahanaim, and we're going to see this the importance of seeing the face of God in next week's parashah, but you got to stay tuned for that. Baruch Adonai Olam, amen v'amen.